Welcome to Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, our first podcast. Yay!
Woo!
I am Taz Ahmed, and this is my co-host,
Zara Norbash.
And we'll be talking to you for the next 30 minutes on fun things about being a good Muslim and a bad Muslim. It gets confusing and blurry.
Sometimes I'm the good Muslim. Sometimes you're the bad Muslim.
The good Muslim.
It feels like a really bad Muslim thing to assume that you're a good Muslim.
So that would make me the bad Muslim?
Right.
I guess so. So
the audience can decide for themselves. I think the fun part about the podcast is that those lines are blurry and it's not always clear.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the reasons why we started talking about this was because Zara and I are in a book called Love and Shella, and that's actually how we met. And in some ways, our stories were the bad Muslim stories in the book.
Actually, the reason why we met.
Yeah.
We were doing
all these book tours
for Love and Shella, The Secret Love Lives of American Muslim Women. And we bonded over the fact that both of us were technically the bad Muslim stories.
Even though they weren't really that bad. They were fine. They were good Muslim stories.
Mine was pretty hot, so it was really bad.
Yours was hot. Mine was a little hotter, though.
Yours has biting in it. That's way hotter. Spoiler alert. Biting in the shower.
I am not blushing now.
And then all of these conversations came up in both of our work. I perform one-person shows.
And I write.
Which is like a very summarized version of saying what you do. I write.
Right.
That's like if I said, things. And I talk.
You do talk.
I talk.
You talk a lot. So actually, before we jump into our first topic, how about you tell me a little bit more about what you actually do?
So I have a one-person show. I have two one-person shows. One is called All Atheists Are Muslim, which is about moving in with my whitey white, infidel, atheist, non-believer boyfriend.
Now husband.
Now husband. The good Muslim thing to do. And moving in with him and telling my Iranian Muslim parents about it. And the fight that ensues. And then the compromise that takes place. Where my dad finds a way to accept him, thus making all atheists, including my husband and everyone else in the country, a Muslim.
Yeah, we're in Sharia law in the U.S. right now.
Sharia law. Sharia law has crept into the United States.
It has.
I feel like Sharia law, like, maybe this is jumping ahead, but Sharia law, like, there are so many things about being a Muslim that I didn't even know until the media told me about it.
That is my life. I didn't know who I was until the media told me about it. I was like, that's
what we believe?
I should be hating myself because the media is telling me to.
Yeah, or like I didn't even know Sharia law existed as a term.
Yeah.
And I was like, is this a rapper? Like Sharia law.
That would be such an awesome rap name.
Thug Life.
Thug Life Sharia Law.
I didn't even understand. Like, so anyway, then it's like, oh, am I a bad Muslim? Because the media is telling me who I actually am, which is a bad Muslim. Because, like, that's pretty much the media's take on all Muslims.
Of course, yes.
You're like, and therefore then a bad Muslim. But so I did this one-person show.
But you're also doing stand-up, too.
I do stand-up also. I took a little bit of a break from stand-up as I was forming my new show, Hijab and Hammer Pants, which is about when I wore hijab for 8 minutes at a Blockbuster.
Awesome.
When I was 12 years old, and then got really overwhelmed and never did it again. And
I had an awesome pair of hammer pants when I was in junior high.
So my mom bought me hammer pants. And, okay, you're a year older than me.
Yes. Thank you for saying that on the radio. Thanks for making me the older one. Got it.
And the hammer pant craze was like already a year gone by. Like, everyone was already in flannel and loving Nirvana when my mom bought me Hammer pants.
Oh, yeah.
And my mom was
like... I mean,
that's
not just because, like, you're younger. That's just because, like, I feel like as brown people, as brown girls growing up, our parents were, like, super not wanting us to be a part of pop culture. And we were always, like, chasing the trend.
See, but that's the opposite for me.
Oh, really? You were ahead of the trend?
Well, my mom was trying. I was way behind the trend. Yeah. I was in no way interested. And at the time, I was going to this Farsi school. It was a religious school also. And they were saying everything that I loved, which was like, be modest, which meant wear black all the time and don't dress up. And I was like, sweet. That is exactly in line with my inclinations.
Which could also be perceived as goth.
Well, there wasn't any eyeliner involved yet. So, right. Or white paint. But in... My mom didn't, even though my mom wore hijab, my mom didn't want me to wear hijab. She wanted me to fit in.
Right. Yeah.
So that's where the Hammer pants came in. Unfortunately, moms don't understand that items on clearance at Mervyn's are not trend-setting fashion choices.
Oh, your poor mom. She tried so hard.
She tried so hard.
She tried so hard.
But so I wore the Hammer pants.
Right.
Instead of the hijab.
And that's what your show's about.
Sort of. I mean, the show is more a conversation about my relationship with hijab and why it's such a loaded topic that can't be addressed without addressing all of its complexity.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like hijab touches on that whole... I mean, for women, it's such a, like... It feels so perfect that fashion choices come up in political conversations about women.
Mm-hmm.
And then also on top of that... Women are told what is and is not a form of liberation.
Right.
Like, if you wear hijab, you are not a liberated woman. If you don't wear hijab, you are a liberated woman. Right. And then there's, like, the radical point of view of it, which actually maybe you should talk about a bit.
Well, I mean, I would say that the radical perspective of it is, like, it doesn't matter one way or another, right?
Well, I think a lot of people... And maybe this is your opportunity to talk more about the work that you do. Because I think a lot of people aren't familiar with the idea of radical politics outside of ISIS beheading people and that being radical.
Right. Yeah. I think that when I think about radical politics, I think of like the 1970s idea of Black radical movement and the radical left of the work that was going on in the U.S. and how that kind of... is about social justice and having progressive causes being addressed from the root, right? In that idea, radical ideas are going to the source and going to the root of each issues, which is, I forgot who said that, but it was something that I read. Anyways, we're going to go into our next topic, which is about why we chose this name as Good Muslim, Bad Muslim as our podcast.
In the first place.
So,
how did it come up?
I can't remember. I feel like we had a conversation.
I think we were playing around with accusing each other of whether who was the good
You know what
Muslim.
I think was at the root of this? Twitter.
And millennials?
No, not millennials. Because I'm clearly the millennial in this conversation.
Though for the record, I am.
No.
According to NPR.
We'll go back to this topic later. And I think one of the things that we were talking about was just how we were perceived as good Muslims or bad Muslims by outsiders, even though, you know, what does it mean? What does it matter to anyone what we are? We are what we are.
Well, it's also this like paradoxical situation where if you're really Muslim, right?
You're supposed to be like covered completely,
modest.
With only your eyes showing, and you're praying five times a day, and you don't eat pork, and you don't do drugs, and you don't drink.
And, you know, you're practicing.
Right.
I identify as the pork-eating, alcohol-drinking, premarital sex-having kind of Muslim.
I identify as the I don't eat pork, and I don't drink Muslim. But I don't pray.
What about the premarital sex part? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So then, like, within our community, there's this whole conversation about, like, what makes a good Muslim. But in the media, if you're really, really Muslim, then you're the bad kind of Muslim. And over again in my shows, I would get people who, you know, I was trying to reach, you know, the like conservative, like gun-toting libertarian would watch my show and be moved by
it. Why were they coming to your show?
Because I was related to them by my husband.
That's what happens when you marry white people.
White people.
White people.
And I had this conversation with them after the show where I was like, so, you know, what do you think? And they were really moved by the show. And then they were like, but you're the good kind of Muslim.
Mm.
And I was like, wait, so what is that exactly? Because according to the Muslim community, I am the bad kind of Muslim.
Right. So I feel like living in the U.S. as a Muslim woman, like, we're kind of attacked by these contradictions. Like, at home, I feel like growing up at home, I was always, you know, berated by my parents for, like, being bad, for wanting to go to punk shows or wanting to dye my hair pink. When, like, the idea of being bad to me was the ones that were out doing drugs and shoplifting and killing people. Cereal. I didn't think that was bad. So, I mean, like, it's all about contradictions, right? Like, so, like,
right.
At home I was, like, a bad Muslim. But at school I was, like, the good Muslim because I wasn't drinking. I was like, being good and doing well in school. So it's that kind of weird contradiction that you live in being a Muslim American or American Muslim.
People always talk
American
about
Muslim. It's American Muslim.
American Muslim. Muslim
American. American. I don't know. There's this conversation also in the going on in the community that is talks about which where does the hyphen go?
Well, and can you be Muslim and a real American?
Right. That too.
Which is relevant right now because Christmas. It's Christmas time.
It is Christmas. Christmas was 2 days ago.
And people are always saying, like, Christmas is an American holiday.
I watched 15 Christmas movies over the past 3 days while I was working on a puzzle. And I feel like that was a very, like, American Muslim thing to do.
Name five.
A Christmas Kiss, Holidays, Love Actually.
Love Actually.
The Russell Peters Christmas special.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know.
This is like all across the board Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like pretty much anything.
Get with Santa.
Any Tim Allen ones in there?
Yeah, yeah. The Christmas with the Cranks. I think that was a Tim Allen one. Yeah. Uh-huh. I watched a lot of Christmas movies. But the funny thing was, like, my dad was in the living room because I went home for the holidays. And he was, like, watching it with us and, like, enjoying it. So I just feel like that was a very, like, Muslim American thing to do.
My Muslim American Christmas tradition.
Oh, you have one?
Yes. Was because I created one for myself because I was so bored on Christmas and I was so miserable as a kid.
Uh-huh.
Like, and it didn't help that the girl across the street was this, like, super Christian, like, you're going to hell, by the way, because you're not Christian friend of mine.
It's a terrible friend. You should have converted her to Islam.
Oh, we both tried. It went both directions. She would be like, you know you're going to hell. And I would be like, actually?
You're going to hell.
We should have a conversation about this. And she would always, after Christmas, come and brag to me about every present she got. You know? And
so then what did you do?
So I created, like, traditions for myself, which was to watch 24 hours of A Christmas Story.
24 hours?
24 hours.
You just, like, have it on replay?
I would just sit there in front of the TV, and I have no idea how I got away with this with my parents.
Right.
But that was my Muslim American Christmas ritual, was, like, nothing is open. I'm going to sit here with my Subway sandwich and watch 24 hours of A Christmas Story. Well, okay, I probably watched like 11 hours
right,
of the 24.
Right, because basically your waking hours.
Yeah, my waking hours. And I just watched it on loop.
That's awesome.
And I did it like 3 years in a row. How before did it make you like feel? Everyone in my family was like, you're insane and you're a freak.
Oh,
and
your parents made you stop.
And that's how. Well, it was like not even stopping because it was like, you should not do this because it's not good for you. It was stopping because it was like, you're crazy.
Well, so you just married into a white family.
Oh my God, that was such a trip. They're like mythical white.
Mythical white. So are there Christmas traditions that you took on this year?
Well, we have a Christmas tree.
You have a Christmas tree.
Like a big, fatty Christmas
tree. Like at your parents' house?
Yeah, it's like huge.
You live with your husband at your parents' house.
Oh, yeah, that's the other
thing. Which is very Muslim.
That is very Muslim. That's a very Muslim thing.
So now that you brought the white man into your parents' house, you have a Christmas tree because your parents are down for whatever your white boy wants you to do.
Yep.
Did you do gift exchanges?
We did. We did a secret Santa.
Oh, wow. This is like really progressive of your family.
We had a garland over the fireplace.
What?
That I bought. I'm owning up.
Oh, yeah.
Michael. We did Santa crafts with my nieces.
That's great.
Like, is it? I don't know. So. In some ways, I feel like I'm giving in.
You're giving in to Christmas?
Yeah, I feel like it's not a good Muslim thing to do to give in. Like, I feel like I should hold down the fort of, like, not everyone has to celebrate Christmas.
You know what, though? I feel like it's okay as long as you also do gift exchanges during Eid. Because that was my salty point was that, you know, everyone would do gift exchanges for Christmas. But then when Eid would roll around, my parents would be like, we don't... Because at Christmas, they would say, that's not our Christmas. Our Christmas is Eid. And then Eid would come along, and then there would be no gift exchanges. They're like, just eat some goat.
Eat some goat?
You know, in biryani, right? But there's, like, no gift exchanges. So I was just like, I don't understand. There's no equivalence here. I don't see an Eid tree. I don't see Eid movies on Netflix. I don't see Eid gift exchanges.
I'm going to hashtag that at the end of, like, every time I'm not feeling really Muslim. Hashtag... Just eat a goat.
Just eat a goat. That's going to be our tagline for the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast.
Whenever you're
anything's
not
going down,
whenever you're just not feeling like Muslim-y,
just eat a goat. Just eat a goat.
At the end of the day, I just ate a goat and called it a day.
So I kind of wanted to ask you if just eat a goat would work in the cereal podcast. Segue.
We'd like to talk about cereal.
Yes, cereal. So
hashtag Adnan is innocent. Is it too far for me to go there? I don't know.
No, I just wanted to say that, like, we were starting this podcast today, and I got a text message at 4 o'clock yesterday from Zara, who asked if she should listen to Serial before we're recording a podcast. And I was like, you know what? Serial's the number one podcast in the U.S. ever. Maybe it would be helpful.
It is about a Muslim, and Rubia Chowdhury, like, is heavily involved, and she's a cool Muslim lady.
It would be awesome if you would. And so she's been doing nothing but listen to Serial since I assigned
4
her.
4 p.m. yesterday.
I assigned her this homework yesterday. So she came in just, like, wanting to talk about it. And I have to admit, even though I've been listening to it since the very beginning, I also am super obsessed with this podcast. So what did you think? You just heard it. What do you think happened?
Okay. I was totally crying at the end of the episode.
I'm sorry I made you cry.
Sarah Koenig made me cry. It was
Sarah.
It's just so depressing and so frustrating.
So frustrating
and so painful. And honestly, my opinion from the first episode to the last episode didn't change.
Right.
This was like, it felt like the case there were beyond a reasonable doubt. Like, it was just the thing that was going through my head the entire time.
Yeah, I definitely think he didn't get a fair trial. Like, I feel like his lawyer, Christina, was terrible. And she kept doing all these things just so that she could make more money off of the family.
Which is terrible.
And I think, actually, you haven't been reading Rabia's blog. But I think if you read some of her blogs...
Just put that out there. More bad Muslimness.
I'm giving more... more material for you to do homework on, basically. You can only do so much since 4 p.m. yesterday.
Which I intend to.
And in one blog, she was just talking about how Christina just kept asking the family for money blatantly in the elevator. It was terrible because it was just, she wasn't lawyering. She was just going through some, I feel like she was going through some sort of financial hardship where she was just trying to make money off of this case.
Yeah.
And I think that's why he wasn't given a fair trial. But I also feel like, there's so many issues with it. But that being said, I don't know if I completely believe he's completely innocent. I think there's something fishy going on between Jay and Adnan. And I also feel like, I don't know. I feel like I listened to all 12 podcasts and I'm just like, I still don't know where I'm at.
Yeah, I didn't listen to all 12. I should, full disclosure, I skipped like 3 in the middle.
You said 2 earlier.
Oh, our producer just, like, lost his mind when I said that. Well, because I was in a rush to, like, also, like, finish it so I could, like, talk about it. Because that's a good Muslim thing to do, is when something that involves a Muslim is in the mainstream media and everybody's talking about it. Probably a good idea, if you're a comedian who discusses Muslim issues, to like learn about it. But sometimes I just, especially because right now everything going on with, you know, the news and Muslims has been so depressing that I just like hibernated from.
We're not judging you here. There's no judgment going on.
I am feeling there so much no judgment right now. No, it's also self-inflicted judgment, because I feel like I should be up to date on all of this stuff and supporting and behind peeps.
So Serial.
So Serial.
So who do you think did it?
I mean, I can't let go that there was this guy who had also killed another Korean woman, young girl. Yeah, the serial killer. Yeah. 13 days he was out. Like, I can't get that out of my mind.
And what about the streaker? Like, yeah. The streaker, and then Jen's statement, and then the Nisha call, and then, like...
Well, and they established that there's this weirdness with the Leakin Park bodies being, like, a really common thing.
Right.
And that creepy people hang out there anyway.
Right.
That, like, you don't just go hang out there, that, like... I got the sense that, like, your average citizen who isn't, like, a criminal doesn't hang out at Lincoln right. Park. Like, they, in the first episode, they made this whole thing about how, like, they don't even know where that place is.
Right.
But the car, Jay did find the car.
Yeah, I feel like Jay's involved somehow. But I think one of the other things that I thought was really interesting about the Serial podcast, I listen to a lot of podcasts, but I was really fascinated with how there was this growing audience for podcasting or listening to this podcast. I couldn't understand it because everyone started talking about Serial. And for me, even though I was just listening to it, I couldn't really understand why there was this kind of like audience for it. And I think one of the things that I thought about was how people love murder mysteries and people love like CSIs and they love being able to be a detective themselves. And I think that's kind of what this podcast was feeding into, is everyone's tendency to try to figure out what was going on.
Did you feel that in any... So here's one thing I'm curious about. One of my friends really does not like the podcast Serial. Like, it politically. Like, she didn't approve of it. She felt that there was some sense of it. Not that it was exploitative, because, you know, they do a really good job of trying, you know, really hard to, like, look at all sides and be a reporter in it. At the same time, her point that I thought was interesting was that a lot of people could be listening to this as entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And that made her feel sick.
Yeah, I feel like that's something
I wonder if people who, you know, there is a really huge anti-Muslim sentiment in the United States, and Rabia talks about that as well. And I was curious what you thought of, or your speculations on what other non-Muslim Americans think when they are listening to it. Do they feel the race politics of it the way that we do?
I think that race politics of the show was really interesting because it involved a Black, a Muslim, and then East Asian. So it was kind of like this like trifecta of races and how they intersect without, and like being told by a white narrative.
Right.
I thought that was really fascinating. I think that kind of led into this unsaid intersection of race politics, which Sarah wasn't equipped to address. But I think what was cool about this format was because it was over 12 weeks, every week you'd find like 5 or 6 articles addressing what was covered in the podcast. And I think that the Serial aspect of the podcast, that every week there was something else, allowed for a national conversation to happen in a way that wouldn't happen if it was just like a one-off show, which I thought was a good way of looking at it. I definitely don't think Sarah was able to address the race politics. As for the entertainment thing, I feel like it was a little sick, but I feel like, you know, we had...
Because there was withholding of information so that you were always teetering.
Right, but I think that that's why it was so cool to be able to read Rabia's blog at the same time that the podcast was coming out, because Rabia was able to reveal certain information that Sarah didn't reveal in her podcast. And that made that interactiveness really cool. Yeah,
the one piece that I found a bit disturbing was the mention of like there being the word kill at the top of the note.
Yeah.
And then when I saw Rabia's blog, there was just, there was the photo, which also, to Serial's credit, was also on the Serial site, the photo.
Yeah, yeah.
But I wondered why they mentioned it that way, because it's obvious, like, it says, it doesn't say kill, it says K, question mark, and then on the next line, apostrophe T-I-L-L. It's not kill.
Right.
There's no kill on the note.
I didn't see that. I need to look at that now. Oh, more things to look at, more things to obsess with over Serial.
Yeah, if somebody has an answer about this, please, like, tweet me and explain what I missed, because that really upset me. I was like, why is this even a question?
Well, I mean, that's her storytelling, right? I think that the thing is, people are going to tell stories however they want to tell stories. But if we can like get access to all the different things, then we can come to our own conclusion too, which I think we are able to do in this case, which we're not able to do in other, like if we pick up a book, then we're just reading whatever the narrator tells us. In this case, we're able to get, you know, Reddit and all these articles and facts from Rabia's blogs, because she was like posting up images constantly. Right. So I felt like that led to more hands-on investigation. The whole entertainment thing, though, like I did, one of the things that I heard was just about cases are about the death of an Asian American woman, and we never hear her voice. And
in the very beginning, when she's reading her diaries,
yeah,
I appreciated,
yeah,
kind of, you know, her being a teenager and a little bit about who she was in that sense.
Yeah, and people said they wanted to hear more of that.
Yeah. And that there was this guy killing young Korean women.
Yeah, which we hear later.
But you can't hit all aspects of a story. I thought one of the things that I thought was really interesting also about it was that the Muslim narrative, the idea of him being a good Muslim versus a bad Muslim, came into play in the court case.
Oh, I know. That's terrible.
That was fascinating also, because so here's the thing for me with good Muslim, bad Muslim, is that like you're outside of the Muslim community, to be really, really, really Muslim is to be Islamist.
Right.
Like the Muslimist Muslim is Islamist, which I feel like that term anyway makes me insane, you know, because it implies that like the more Muslim you are, the worse you are for the planet Earth, right? Like globally, like let alone for the country.
Right.
So being really, really, really Muslim is a bad thing, right? The bad kind of Muslim, like my unknown relative said after my show. And but within the Muslim community, being, so outside of the Muslim community, to be a good Muslim is to be assimilated, quote unquote, like,
right.
You know, I eat pork and I like, you know, am chill about sex and I, you know, will drink and hang out and not be annoying about drinking. You know what I mean? Is like, oh, that's the good kind of Muslim has been my experience hanging out with non-Muslim friends.
Right.
And the bad kind of Muslim within the community is the pork eating, alcohol drinking.
Right.
Muslim. And some
There's
people
no
say,
winning.
Right. And some people say, I'm not Muslim at all, you know, where other people outside of the Muslim community are like, oh, it's so great to have somebody who I can relate to who's Muslim.
Right.
You know, and then inside the community, I get people who cringe at that, who are like, why are you representing me? You don't represent anything about me. And, you know, that is a whole conversation in and of itself, the politics of representation. But that paradox, right? But in the court case, they were saying that because he was lying to his parents and he wasn't a good Muslim boy, that fed into his murder narrative.
Yeah. Which is so terrible, because that would make every Muslim a murderer.
Exactly.
Because all Muslim American kids are hiding shit from their parents constantly.
Part of that is the pressure put on a lot of young Muslims like me, I should speak from my personal experience, to be less Muslim-y.
Yeah.
And to just hang out and to just have a drink and to just, you know, date. What's the big deal? You know? But then that makes you a murderer.
And basically that's what our show is about.
Contradictions. When you're
in this contradiction,
you're no win situations.
Yeah. You'll get put in jail like Adnan. So
maybe we could talk a bit about some projects we have coming up.
Yeah. Let's talk about some projects we have coming up.
So I have, I'm working on a show right now called Hijab and Hammer Pants.
Cool. You've been talking about this for a while. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, me too. I wonder when that girl's going to do it. So I'm performing Hijab and Hammer Pants. It's kind of, Hijab and Hammer Pants is actually a compilation of three pieces I've done. Mm-hmm. One about when I wore a hijab when I was a kid and my mom wanted me to fit in and wear hammer pants instead. And even though she wore hijab. And another segment is about when my brother was diagnosed with stage 4D cancer. And part of the reason why his cancer had progressed so far was because the doctor was racist and said that our people treated our sons like princes and that we were fretting and that we were just trying to throw money at a problem. And he refused to sign off on his MRI. And it took a month. And in that time, his cancer had severely progressed. So there's that component that's also in there. And talking about, you know, the lawyer who was working with our case for malpractice against this doctor. But then when 9/11 happened, the lawyer dropped the case and said, you know, there's no judge or jury in the country right now who would see your mom with that thing around her head and your dad and your last names and side with you against an American doctor.
So where can people see this show?
I'll be performing it in San Francisco at Stageworks Theater. January 15th. And you can also find information about it at zaracomedy.com.
And what else are you working on? Is it just a play? I feel like you were writing.
I'm working on a memoir that puts together my first show, All Atheists Are Muslim, and Hijab and Hammer Pants.
Awesome.
In the memoir.
Cool.
And someday I'll keep a blog. You have a regular running blog.
I do. I have a column on Love and Shella's website.
Where we can really peer in on your life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called Radical Love. It's out the first Wednesday of every month. I have 13 columns up so far. Hopefully I can keep it up. And I have a bunch of other things going on. I have a music blog called Mishti Music. Where we post stuff about music, South Asian music from the diaspora. So we just released a Christmas chutney album a couple weeks ago, which is going to be a little dated by the time this comes out. But hey, you know, like chutney music is timeless. So Christmas music is timeless. So maybe people can listen to it. And then I'm also in an art show in the Bay Area called Rebel Legacy. And
gorgeous art, by the way.
Thanks. That's going to be up through March 7th. I think it's the Oakland Asian Art Museum, but you can just Google Rebel Legacy and you can find out more about the show. So I'll be up in the Bay actually on March 7th for the closing panel for that. So I'll see you there.
Yep.
It'll be fun.
March 7th.
March 7th.
Which is also around Persian New Year time. I'll be Persianing it up.
Which means lots of baklavas?
It means lots of DJ Doctor house music, which is our traditional form of music.
That should be our song. Should be our intro song for
good Muslim, bad Muslim.
And on that note, we will close out this first episode of Good what Muslim Bad Muslim podcast. We hope you enjoyed it.
Inshallah.
Keep in touch. We'll let you know where to find us for the next one.
Peace out.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by me, Taz Ahmed, and my trusty sidekick, Zara Norbash. You can follow me on Twitter at TazzyStar. That's TAZZYSTAR. And Zara at Zara Nu. That's ZAHRANOO. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Surasmith. And you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag goodmuslimbadmuslim.
Good Muslim, bad Muslim.